Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by ACR Poker, where beginning this Sunday, April 7th, 2024, we have our Turbo Boost Mini Series, $2 million in guaranteed prize pools with buy-ins starting at just $1.10 and an added leaderboard contest awarding 10, that's right, 10 seats to the largest tournament ever offered on an America-facing site, the $12.5 million Venom beginning April 14th. Boy, oh boy, am I excited for that one. My name is Clayton Fletcher, and I'm in New York City. I want to start off this week by thanking you guys, those who have subscribed or followed my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ClaytonComic. I did run deep in a couple of tournaments just the other night earlier this week, and I was happy to see so many familiar names in the chat, everybody cheering for me. You know, poker is usually such a solo project, but between this podcast and now my newfound love for streaming on Twitch, I feel like it's getting to be more like a team sport, which is odd because I did not do well in the actual tag team event last year when I lasted exactly one hand and my teammate therefore played even fewer than that. I have plenty of more streams coming up, including this coming Tuesday when I will be hosting the Killing Bird home game on my Twitch stream because Killing Bird himself has his priorities all mixed up and he has decided to take the night off. Something about my son is getting married, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to hear those types of excuses for missing the Tuesday night home game, but I will be hosting it myself on twitch.tv/ClaytonComic this coming Tuesday. I will also be streaming on April 14th when I will be playing the $2,650 Venom, the aforementioned $12.5 million Venom Championship. I really can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'll actually be in the great country of Canada at that time. I have shows coming up in Canada, Ontario to be exact, at Yuck Yucks. I've got shows in Toronto, April 12th and 13th, and then Niagara Falls, April 19th and 20th. I really enjoy touring. I've been having a lot of fun hitting the road. I've got a lot of stuff to promote. You guys know about my book, The ROI of LOL, and my brand new comedy special, Middle Child Syndrome, on Amazon Prime and Apple TV. So the tour is to support those things and other projects that I may have coming down the pipe. But it's all going well. The special's doing well. The book is a bestseller on Amazon. So all good things. My professional career is in an upswing, and I'm hoping that my poker career can continue its recent upswing as well. I'm so excited for the summertime in Vegas. I've been looking at the schedules each and every day as they are released. I've picked out a few events I want to play at the Wynn and the Venetian and plenty of events that I'll be playing this summer in the World Series of Poker at the Horseshoe. I'm feeling like it might be my year to finally win a bracelet, but we shall see. I'll actually be getting there a little bit later than I typically do. I usually like to get there right when the whole thing starts, but this year I have to miss about the first week because, again, some people have their priorities all mixed up, and my dear uncle has decided that June is apparently a good month to, like, get married. I don't get it. I'll never understand people, but that's going to delay me just a little bit as I will be the best man. And apparently that means I have to show up. So go figure. I'll be at the wedding. And then immediately following the wedding, basically just a few hours after the wedding, I'll be on the first flight to Las Vegas to try to catch up with those who get started 1 week before me. I simply cannot wait. All right, let's review a hand from last week's episode. This was a hand that I introduced towards the end of last week's episode, but this time I want to take another look using a fantastic tool called GTO Wizard. So you guys might remember this is from the $55 long card daily double, and there's a $25,000 guarantee. At this point, the blinds were $1,250 and $2,500 with a 325 ante, and the table was playing eight-handed. A very tight player raised from middle position with a stack of 85,000. He had 34 times the big blind, and the action folded to me in the big blind holding the ace of spades, queen of diamonds, and I elected to just call because I had taken a note that this player was much tighter than the average player in this tournament, and I felt like ace-queen was not really a three-bet versus his relatively tight range. GTO Wizard doesn't care about my opponent or his perceived range or how many HUD statistics I may have had on him. GTO Wizard literally never calls in this spot from the big blind with the ace-queen offsuit. All of them are either a three-bet or, surprisingly, at least to me, just a flat-out shove. So GTO Wizard has us putting in 69% of the time the entire 85,000. So, I mean, look at this, guys. This guy has made it 5K when there was already about 6,000 in the middle. So that put 11,000 in there. And now I'm just supposed to shove for 85,000 effective over top of that. I mean, this seems egregious to me. This seems gratuitous to me. I mean, this is crazy. Obviously, the wizard knows things that I don't and that all of us don't, but I'm very surprised to see a 69% three-bet shove from the big blind when we can just call and see a flop or, you know, maybe put in some other type of three-bet. But no, the sizing here is all you can eat, baby, and that really threw me for a loop. But it does mean that we can't really review the rest of the hand using GTO Wizard because we should never have any calls from the big blind. And that's what I did. So I've already screwed this hand up so bad, we can't even get to the flop. But this is one of the things I really like about GTO Wizard. You can study any spot. You know, just put in the how many blinds, whether it's a tournament or a cash game, what the flop was, and figure it out from there. The wizard does the rest. You can practice any spot. There are drills, whether it's blind versus blind or facing a three bet or any of the built-in drills that they already have for you to run through and improve your game versus a GTO computer opponent, which is great. And you can also analyze hands that you've already played by uploading them and having the wizard search for holes in your game, mistakes that you make frequently, such as not shoving 34 times the big blind facing a min raise. Yeah, but whatever spots that we all play in a way that is suboptimal, this program will help you locate those spots, identify the holes in your game, and start to plug those leaks just in time for the World Series of Poker. I highly recommend this. You can sign up using our affiliate link, which is in the description of this podcast episode, and you'll receive 10% off of your first purchase, and I promise you'll be glad you did. All right, let's continue with this $55 long card daily double. Very soon after that last hand, in fact, during the same level, the 2500 big blind level, I was moved to a new table, a seven-handed table. There were 75 players left in the entire tournament. We are in the money. The average stack is 105,000, and we have a stack of 156,000. The player under the gun, who I know nothing about, opens to 5,500, so just a little tick above a min raise, and he's got a stack of 125,000, so 50 big blinds, and the action folds back to me in the big blind with the king of hearts, nine of hearts. And I've got about 62 big blinds for what it's worth, and I decide to make the call. If you told me that you sometimes three bet in this situation, that's fine. I mean, we have some blockers like ace-king. We block ace-king. We block king-king. That's totally cool. We also have a suited hand, which might be useful if our 3-bet happens to get called. I think there's nothing wrong with occasionally 3-betting with king-nine suited, but I decided to just call, and I think that's the standard play, and we saw a flop. There is 16,000 in the middle, and the flop comes 9 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds, 6 of hearts. So 9-7-6 with 2 diamonds and 1 heart. Hero with the king of hearts, 9 of hearts. I check my option, and my opponent bet 8,000 into the 16,000 pot, so just a half pot bet there. And I decided to call. We could maybe check raise this sometimes, get value from worse nines or a hand like ace eight, protecting our hand versus ace jack or ace queen. But I think it's better to just call for the most part and see what develops on 4th Street. And that's what I did. I just called. And now with 32,000 in the middle, the turn comes the deuce of hearts. So our board is now 9 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds, 6 of hearts, deuce of hearts, hero with the king of hearts, 9 of hearts. So now we have top pair and a flush draw. You could certainly lead this card if you want to. The old check call lead could come in handy here. Maybe 10,000 or so, just about 1/3 pot. I mean, you're not really going to get a better hand to fold, but you can sort of set the price by doing that. Like if our opponent has a hand like, let's say, pocket jacks, it might be pretty tricky for him if you lead the turn, whereas he may have bet bigger on the turn if we had checked to him. If we bet smaller, we might be able to save ourselves a few chips with what we used to call a defensive bet, which now I hear it more often referred to as a blocking bet. But it's a bet made from out of position that is designed to control how many chips go in on a particular street. So I decided instead to go for a check raise. You know, we've got a top pair. We've got a flush draw. It's a somewhat scary board anyway. And I was going to try to put my opponent to the test on this card. So I checked, and my opponent kind of foiled my plans. He bet 23,000 into the 32,000 pot. And remember, this player only started the hand with 125K. So I really didn't want to check raise such a large bet. I was hoping he would go smaller on the turn to give me a little bit more wiggle room. I did not want to get pot committed against him because I felt like there was a pretty good chance I was behind when he bets this big on the turn. So I decided to just make the call. So I kind of changed my plan in the middle of the hand because I was not expecting such a large sizing on 4th Street. So at that point, there was 78,000 in the middle, and the river came the 4 of spades. I checked one more time, and this time our opponent bets 26,000 into the 78,000 pot, leaving himself just another 63K behind. Honestly, I think a really good player could probably fold this. I mean, yeah, I'm getting a good price. He's betting about 1/3 of the pot, offering me 4-to-1 odds. But, you know, this just doesn't feel like it's ever a bluff to me. Our opponent is basically not really polarizing himself with this tiny bet. So unless he's doing some kind of weird, like, post-oak bluff or something, I'm basically just getting owned a lot here when I pay off. But I'm not a really good player, so I did call. And sure enough, our opponent turns over pocket aces with no heart. So I had plenty of outs on the river, but that 4 of spades was not one of them. So let's do another hand here. But listen, guys, if you're not yet playing on ACR Poker, I have a great deal for you. There's never been a better time to join. Like I mentioned, we've got the $12.5 million Venom coming up. Great tournaments and cash games on a daily basis, round-the-clock action on ACR Poker. You can get a 100% first-time deposit bonus up to $2,000 by clicking the link in the description of this podcast and using the promo code TPE. So continuing on in this $55 long card daily double, I got moved to yet another table. And at this point, the blinds were 1750 and 3500 with a 450 ante. And we're at another seven-handed table. I did not recognize any of my opponents except for one who is not involved in this particular hand. At this point, we only had 80,000, so about 22, 23 big blinds. The average was 115, and there were 68 players remaining in the tournament. At this seven-handed table, one fold to me. That's the player I recognized. So he's out, and now it's up to me with the five of hearts, five of diamonds. So it's a seven-handed table. If you want to fold this hand under the gun at a nine-handed table, that's fine. But I think we've got a little bit too much hand here to throw it away. I don't like being in early position. I'm not exactly sure how to handle getting three bet if that should occur at this brand new table where I recognize almost no one. But still, I think we have to get involved. I min-raised it. I made it 7,000 and it folded around to the big blind who called. Now, he is the chip leader at this table and one of the chip leaders in the tournament with 220 in his stack when the average was at 115. So at that point, there's 19K in the pot and 73K in Hero's stack. The flop comes Jack of clubs, 10 of clubs, 4 of clubs. Jack 10, 4, all clubs. Hero with the 5 of hearts, 5 of diamonds. Opponent checks, and I have been working on these monochrome flops with GTO Wizard. You really don't want to bet very often, and when you do, you bet a very small amount. So it's mostly checking when the flop comes out all one suit. And if you are going to bet, you want to bet a very small amount, whether you have it or not. I opted for a tiny bet here. I put in $52.50 into the 19,000 pot, and our opponent made the call. So at that point, there's 29.5 in the middle, and the turn comes the 7 of spades. So Jack of clubs, 10 of clubs, 4 of clubs, 7 of spades. Opponent checks, and I checked behind. I intended to possibly bluff the river if the river came a brick, and in doing so, I would be effectively turning my fives into a bluff. But the fact that I don't have any clubs in my hand and that there are three on the board means a lot of my opponent's calling range on the flop would be some type of flush draw, maybe like with a 10 or with a 7 and a flush draw, something like that. So I decided that I was going to fire big, possibly even with an overbet on a blank river. But instead, the river came the Jack of spades, pairing the board and kind of ruining my game plan because I can no longer get him to fold a 10 or a 7. That Jack is just too good of a card for my opponent. Not that he has a jack, but that he's going to be more confident in paying off with a 10 or a 7. So I really had to pump the brakes on that jack on the river. I checked behind, and to my surprise, my opponent turned over the king of hearts, 9 of diamonds. So no, he did not have a club, and he just had a gut shot. Well, I guess he also has an overcard, etc., but I'm kind of surprised he called even a tiny bet on the flop with such a weak holding and never turned it into a bluff himself. So I made copious notes on this opponent after that one. And perhaps more importantly, I also collected a much needed pot. All right, let's do one more. A little bit later on, the blinds had gone up to 2,000 and 4,000 with a 500 ante. Still seven-handed at this table, and the action folded to the cutoff, who is the known loose aggressive player. Now, I've had the pleasure of tangling with this fellow over 200 plus hands, and these are the numbers. 22-15, fairly loose aggressive, but within the realm of normalcy. 11% 3-bet, that's pretty darn high, and 6.0 post-flop aggression. And for those who are unfamiliar with HUD stats and normal HUD stats, this number right here is absolutely off the charts. That means on the flop, this player bets and raises 6 times more often than he checks and calls. So he's very, very, very aggressive on the flop. A normal player might have a PFA something like 2.5. So this guy's well over double that. So he is a wild and aggressive loose cannon type. And he opens to 90,000 from the cutoff. I'm next to act on the button with queen of diamonds, 10 of clubs, and my stack is now at 100,000. So I've got 25 big blinds facing a late position raise on the button with queen 10 offsuit. I decided to go for the 3-bet here. I made it 23K, and I fully expected to take it down a good amount of the time, but instead the action folded back to the original raiser, our loose aggressive friend, who made the call. So now we've got a pot brewing 56,000 in the middle. And by the way, my opponent just started the hand with 90,000, so we're actually playing his stack as the effective stack, about 22, 23 big blinds. So with 56,000 in the middle, the flop comes ace of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, 4 of hearts. Ace 10, 4 with 2 diamonds, hero with the queen of diamonds, 10 of clubs, and now our opponent checks. I opted for the check back here. I think he's going to have a good amount of ace X in his range. He could also, because we know how loose aggressive he is, he could go for a check raise without anything that strong on the flop. And we've been talking about this now, guys, for the last few weeks, where when I have a very aggressive opponent, I am less likely to bet or raise because I'm concerned about getting blown off my hand. That's what these guys do well. And one way to combat that is to just kind of tighten it up a little bit, toning down my own aggression just a bit, especially when I'm not sure how to react to aggression in my face. So in other words, if I decide to bet this flop and my opponent goes for a big check raise, can I really fold? I mean, I've got second pair and a backdoor royal flush draw, but at the same time, do I really want to get all 22 big blinds in on the flop? Probably not. So I decided to check behind. The turn comes the 4 of diamonds, pairing the board, and my opponent checked again. Well, at that point, I was starting to feel more confident that my pair of 10s could be the best hand, but still kind of struggling to come up with any good outcome from betting. I mean, if I bet, I don't know what can call me that I can beat, right? Maybe another 10, but I'm chopping with all of them, right? 10s and 4s with an ace kicker. So I just didn't want to get check raised, and I didn't think I could get value from betting. So again, I decided to check behind. And now on the river, it's another ace, the ace of spades. So our final board is ace 10, 4, 4, ace. And this time our opponent shoves 64,000 chips into the pot of 56,000. And I remember saying out loud, really? Do you really have an ace? Could he actually have an ace here and have played it this way? I don't know, guys. I didn't know what to do. I went on his reputation alone, and I decided to make the call for like 90% of my stack with queen 10, and opponent turned over the ace of clubs, jack of clubs. Kind of surprised he didn't 4-bet me with that hand pre-flop, but yeah, I guess he played it well. He kept trying to get me to bet so that he could check raise me or whatever. And I just slow played it all the way down. And then he still got all the chips in with the overbet on the river. I didn't last much longer, but I did manage to finish in the top 25 in this tournament, which is quickly becoming one of my favorite events every day on the site. And that'll do it for this episode. Guys, if you haven't had a chance yet to leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please take a moment and do that now. It really, really helps a lot as far as trying to get our podcast to climb the ranks and become more visible to listeners out there who may be looking to listen to people talk about poker. And that's something you can do free that really helps us out so much. And thank you in advance for doing that. And for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, and with special thanks, as always, to our very generous sponsor, ACR Poker, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas plays. For-
hold 'em, let 'em hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Baby, when it's love, it's not rough, it isn't fun. Oh, whoa.